when you optimize for the customer, your growth is actually bigger than it could be if you like pay for it. The data shows us our subscribers drive better retention than our one-time purchasers. So you would think, okay, like let's get more subscribers. But then you go down that thought exercise and it's like, well, why would someone subscribe first? The product is incredible. The brand is incredible. The experience is amazing. It's thoughtless. It's easy. It's all the things that make up like true retention outside of just like, we sent them an email and gave them a discount code. That's not retention. Like that's a part of trying to get someone into a subscription. Some people leave a job because they're like, I hate this job and I want to go somewhere else. I was like, wow, this company is actually going to make it. And that's why I'm going to leave. Back then, our strategists were called growth guides. He came up with this thing called growth guide training. I like look back on it. I'm like, were we even allowed to be doing some of the stuff that was being done? He like had them waking up at a certain time, going to bed at a certain time, like studying, had study materials, books. He had like everyone get a Whoop. And he's like, this is not just about you knowing how to grow a business. This is about your like personal physical performance.
I'm here cracking a beverage. I'm here with Shireen from Bobby. It's going to be a fun one. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, I actually think it's going to be more fun with Cody gone, don't you?
I think it'll be a tough one. I can't say yay or nay just because I don't want to get in trouble, but there's a high chance.
We planned this beforehand. You were supposed to say that it's more fun without Cody. Come on.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I feel like I've gotten some press prep over the last 2 years at Olipop and Jones, and I've gotten really good at playing politics, which is like a pro and a con. When I joined Olipop, they were like just crushing. I think I was number 15 or 16. And there was like a ton of press that were interested, but both co-founders were not like super excited about talking to the press. And myself and Steven were both like, we couldn't shut up. So they're like, if you guys are going to continue talking to the press, we may as well prep you and tell you what you should and shouldn't say. So we had a whole like PR training, which is which was fun. But yeah, I'd love to hear a bit about you, and then we'll talk about kind of your marvelous career, your director of sloth position that has since changed to a VP of growth position, one of the fastest growing formula brands in the country.
Down to Chat is brought to you by Postscript. In my opinion, Postscript is the SMS platform built for Shopify brands. To be totally transparent, we just switched at Jones Road to Postscript, and it is the best decision we've ever made. We were on a competitor before, and they started tacking on all types of fees. The platform was not being improved at all. It was just getting really expensive, and the service we were getting was just nothing compared to what we've received from Postscript since being with them. The product with Postscript is just hands down the best that I've ever used. To me, it has the best integrations for Shopify stores of all sizes. It's got the best feature set. The segmentation is the easiest and most powerful. The pop-ups are great. But really, the thing that I love is I've never experienced such great service from a software provider. The only time I heard from our previous provider was around contract renewal time. But with Postscript, they've gone out of their way above and beyond to make our program uber successful. And it's really evident that they care about us getting as much value out of our program as possible. So in my opinion, with Postscript, you get the best product on the market, you get it at the best price, and you get it with the best service. There's a reason why the fastest growing Shopify brands like Dr. Squatch, Native, Olipop, Feastables, and now Jones Road Beauty are all using Postscript for their SMS program. Sign up for Postscript today to take your SMS program to new heights.
My son was on a bunch of Bobby Formula early on. I connected with Elizabeth, who's leading CX there. So we'll have a ton to talk about. I hope you brought some spicy takes just because I see it on Twitter. I want to see it IRL. And that's that. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks, Eli. Excited to be here. I will forgive you throwing me under the bus.
We got this kicked off really well.
I'm ready to bring the heat.
There you are. Well, first things first, your early days at CTC, Common Thread Collective, which is one of the biggest and best in the biz. They've worked with so many D2C brands. You had this strategy role there. So I'm as a total D2C noob, as somebody that's only worked at like small D2C brands, I'm very curious what a strategy role at a massive or a pretty large agency looks like. And then we can kind of just continue walking through your journey and talk about Bobby and the things you love, the things you hate, the cost cap hot takes and all that.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of my career agency side. I kind of came up in a software design and dev agency, and a lot of my earlier career was smaller boutique agencies, some with big projects. Like, fun fact, I did front end QA on Metallica.com in my early years, when back when Magento was the rage. And coming to an agency like Common Thread Collective was amazing, because I joined when there were maybe like 30 to 50. We scaled to maybe like 150. And so it's definitely, being in a strategy position at an agency that's scaling that quickly, it's definitely less you're in the weeds wearing a million different hats, actually in client accounts, hands-on keyboard, and you're trying to figure out how to scale yourself through other people and how to create systems and processes for people to do strategy at scale. And I think that's where, shout out to Taylor Holiday, he's brilliant. He came up with something called, back then our strategists were called growth guides. He came up with this thing called growth guide training. I like look back on it, I'm like, were we even allowed to be doing some of the stuff that was being done? He like had them waking up at a certain time, going to bed at a certain time, like studying, had study materials, books. He had like everyone get a whoop, and he's like, this is not just about you knowing how to grow a business. This is about your like personal physical performance. And, incredible. You know, he's a professional athlete. So he brought that to the team. And I think that created a different level of gameplay. But yeah, we are also just running some incredibly sophisticated forecasting for businesses at scale. So I think the majority of the strategy work was focused in how do we forecast and create plans to scale these businesses at scale through, you know, the team grew from 5 to 15 growth teams over the course of maybe like a year and a half. And incredible clients like Native Deodorant, Igloo Coolers, to like a $1 million mom and pop brand. And so the range, the exposure to all of the categories, the exposure to the forecasting and the systems, how to operate and get insane efficiency out of people. Those were like amazing skills to get there.
I love it. I think something that Cody and I think that's like the dynamic that we have here is that Cody's this meticulous math growth guy, and I'm this like soft emotional retention guy. And I think there's been this like real shift for me, because like now I'm not at a venture-backed business that's raising $50 million to sell soda. I'm at a business that's like looking at efficiency. And it's been interesting to kind of transition that way of thinking, the way of forecasting. Like you said, like we're doing forecasting now on a pretty deep level that we haven't done. Cody took the training from Dave Recook, and now we're like, we're all in on the forecasting to the $100 or to the 1,000 orders, et cetera. What's it like switching from, we'll talk about some nitty gritty stuff, but what's it like switching from this, you know, you see a lot of people on the agency side, they do the agency thing and then they say, fuck it, I'm starting my own agency. And all of a sudden they have another agency. And then all of a sudden you have 55 agencies. Some people know what they're doing. Some people don't know what they're doing. I think we've seen a lot of kind of spicy hot takes on Twitter about like the best agencies and the worst agencies. And so much of this is like the clients you take. You probably have more to say about that than I do, but like the best agency in the world can't create a great product. They can squeeze money today out of a bunch of customers. They can't really make the product better. Have you worked with, on the agency side, have you worked with brands that just, you're like, oh, this is kind of not really going to work. Like the product is just not there.
Yeah. It's been an interesting journey. And I think I have gone down the path of like, I'm going to go in-house isn't for me. I'm going to go back to agency and I'm going to start my own thing and do consulting. And, you know, it's interesting, but I think going in-house the exposure to the different pieces of the business are such great things to have in your arsenal. And I do think if you've been only agency ever, you kind of lack some of that context of like, what is it to operate inside of a brand? And I do think at times agencies can be blindsided by like all the inner workings of what's happening, the historical context. And they're like, why can't you just create a new product for me? Like if you create this new product, like you're going to hit like XYZ target that I set in my little deck. And it's like, yeah. Well, it's a little bit more complex than that. Like, but I do think like coming from agency, the most important skills are like being client facing. You still have to be client facing in-house. You have to get people to believe you and want to do what you say. If they don't work under you, you have to like be able to collaborate and get buy-in and sell your ideas, which is super important. You have to present your idea as well. But yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing for me, like when I started my career, I've never done agency, but I started my career doing like really small companies, one of four employees doing everything. I started something that failed. And then as I transitioned into larger companies, I realized that this buy-in thing is actually like in a leadership or in any kind of like manager position, a good like 50% of your time is managing people and managing up and down, like getting buy-in on large projects. Like I can come up with an idea that I think is incredible and I can't even have the data to prove it. I still need buy-in from like ops, product team, you know, whatever sales team you have if you're in retail as well. And then your own team. Like I might have this incredible idea and it's still going to take a lot more work for my team to work with me to implement it. And now I have to get them to buy in. Super interesting. I think the unique kind of shift that you made is going from this strategy role, and plenty of people go from agency to kind of in-house. You also chose a business that's growing at ridiculous speeds, and you went from this kind of like strategy role to strictly kind of more of a growth role. Did that change kind of like your day-to-day, what you do and what you don't do?
Yeah. And I would give I feel like I made a very good decision. Some people leave a job because they're like, I hate this job and I want to go somewhere else. I was like, wow, this company is actually going to make it. And that's why I'm going to leave. And I think that is due to just at CTC, we had a massive data set of hundreds of e-com businesses. And essentially what Taylor Holiday trained us on is like, look at any business and understand who's going to make it and where they're going to break and where the gaps are and how to fix them. And so like within just hearing about the business model and the economics of the business and the space and the industry that hadn't been disrupted before, I was like, wow, this is lightning in a bottle. I have to jump. And I was growth team member number one. So it was much more in the weeds, building ads, you know, like setting up email campaigns, setting up SMS campaigns. But I think being in I was overseeing a business unit at CTC of like, you know, it was growing really quickly. So I had gotten removed from the actual day to day. And I think it was like a welcomed chat, like fun thing, like, oh, cool. I get to jump back into the work and be a little bit more creative and be scrappy and figure this thing out. And now the team is, we have four teams on my team. We have data science, paid acquisition, performance content, and lifecycle marketing. So it's been also really a really fun journey to go from like one to a team of, you know, almost 11 now, which is, it's wow. Exciting.
This is my selfish question. What is, you said performance, what was it?
Content.
What does that mean?
Yeah. So basically we have SEO, we have editorial and affiliates, and we have, we actually made an acqui-hire of a industry influencer who had her own platform. And she's our education lead, because education is such a big part of the buying process for infant formula. It's like, we're not trying to convince you to buy infant formula. We're educating you on the options that are out there. And she's like, education is a big part of growth. So it's like the performance content team. They're not like the beautiful branded content. They're the, we're going to like really drive organic acquisition.
Season 3 of Down to Chat is brought to you by TapCart. We've chatted a bunch about TapCart in the past, but they make it extremely easy to create an app that often sees higher conversion, higher AOV, higher LTV from all the folks that use it. I wanted to briefly highlight our friends Ron and Ash from Obvi. You've probably seen them on Twitter. They create a ton of magic with Obvi. Some stats that they've seen with TapCart: 100% higher conversion rate in-app versus mobile web, 95% app user retention, 15%+ higher AOV in-app, and 1.5x transactions on app for everyone on their website. If looking at these stats, their app has an impressive conversion rate, you know, on app versus mobile web, higher retention, higher AOV, all of which, you know, increase their LTV and overall revenue. They're so awesome at creating, you know, a community and driving that community towards their app as a tool to turn shoppers into brand advocates. If you've not yet checked out TapCart, check them out today and get up to 2 months free when you sign up. It's tapcart.com/down to chat, tapcart.com/down to chat. Now let's get into it.
I love it. I think we can probably pause on the education piece and talk about it for a while, just because I think we have a ton in common on the beauty side, where I think the differences here are, like, you're selling formula, which is pretty straightforward. People know what formula is, but there's still differences between, like, the formula they were buying beforehand and the formula you're selling. With us, kind of, well, two things I want to talk about. First of all, the education piece. Second of all, before I forget, I want to talk about the retention reporting into growth and what that looks like and how that's been going. But on the education side, we have been working on, like, our kind of top 2-3 our hero products are super, super novel and different. Our Miracle Balm doesn't really exist. I mean, now there's a couple of dupes, but they didn't exist before we created them. I think there's a ton of education. It's like, you know, every ad or most ads are running towards it. It's our kind of like acquisition product, and there's a ton of education that has to be done. When people use it correctly, they love it. If people don't use it correctly, they hate it. We have worked on, like, so we, you know, at every part of the customer journey, we need to educate. So in the ad copy, in the, you know, the landing page has a ton of education, the PDP has education, email, SMS, and we still find that customers are like, hey, I bought this and I did it and it's not working. And we're like, well, I don't know, you know, and we'll send them an email explaining how they could have done it better and they use it the correct way and they love it. And we've been, well, I've been inspired by, you know, Cody and I were talking about the Bobby kind of like educational pages that you guys have on your site, whether it's like on the learn more section where you have like if your baby is X or your baby is Y, and you kind of click through that module. And we've been working on creating, you know, similar kind of like educational pages that we can direct traffic all throughout the funnel, both pre and post purchase, with FAQs and GIFs showing how to use it and kind of like educate as much as we possibly can. And we also see education as one of this, you know, monster kind of like pillar that we can tackle. I think it's so interesting because you're going against, you know, formula. It's when I was talking to Elizabeth on your CX side, and I was just talking about the fact that, you know, like you go to a hospital and on your way out, they're giving you formula. Like you're kind of like they're in everywhere and getting somebody to switch to a new brand, like the cost of switching with a newborn baby is so huge. So education, like the way you're thinking about education, is super fascinating. Is there anything on the education piece that you think has been super helpful that we haven't hit that you think would be helpful for the audience?
Yeah. I mean, everything that we do from an education standpoint starts with keyword research, just like you would with any other SEO strategy. And I think, like, there's this, I don't know if people are really talking about this big shift in SEO. Like, whenever you do a Google search now, it's not just the Google ads and the organic results. It's the videos, it's YouTube videos, TikTok videos, and like PR, you know, third party content. So I think like approach it from what are people looking to have answered and how can we meet them when they're asking the questions, and then basically just surround all the results that they could be coming to. So it's like when we answer a question, it's not only a pillar page on our site, it's not only a blog post on our blog, which is a separate site. So we take two SERPs. We also have a TikTok video, a YouTube video, a YouTube short. We've reached out to other publishers to get published on the same topic. So if you do a Google search for a topic that we're targeting, like we have been behind 4 or 5 of the results, and we can't, but there's like, we're highly regulated. We can't say we're the best, like, because according to the FDA, every infant formula is the best for a baby because it's gone through FDA regulation. So all we can really do is educate. All we can do is like tell people the differences and try and understand what they're looking for and how to deliver that information as easily as possible, as unbiased as possible. But it's important for us to like be able to control the narrative and not have, you know, false information floating out there about our brand.
That makes a ton of sense. You're kind of living in this universe where you're looking at everything from SEO on the organic side to paid to performance to retention. How do you define like what, you know, retention is obviously the post-purchase side of the journey, but how do you define like what are the core kind of principles that make your retention better than any other brand, or like what are your kind of focuses on retention that you think you can do better than not just other formula brands, but in general in D2C? Like retention has been kind of like, I guess, positioning this differently. Retention to me has been like one of the most stale parts of a business. Like I think it's just been agencies sending email and SMS without a focus on like something I've spoken about frequently here is like we are so focused on like increasing AOV today, and there's less of a focus or patience on an LTV curve, even though we have the data. Like we have the data that says that if customers buy 4 times in 4 months, they are significantly, you know, like you have a higher chance of them spending more money with a lifetime, but we would rather push them to buy 4 times next week, even if they won't purchase for a year. A lot of that is the energy of like money today is more valuable than money tomorrow, and all that kind of like economic stuff that makes me want to fall asleep. But outside of that, like what thoughts on retention as a whole, thoughts on what you guys are doing differently or better because you guys are crushing it?
Yeah. I mean, you like hit the nail on the head when the data shows us our subscribers are drive better retention than our one-time purchasers. So you would think, okay, like let's get more subscribers, but then you go down that thought exercise and it's like, well, why would someone subscribe first? And then you get into the consumer psychology of like, why would someone subscribe first? The product is incredible. The brand is incredible. The experience is amazing. It's thoughtless. It's easy. It's all the things that make up like true retention outside of just like, we sent them an email and gave them a discount code. That's not retention. Like that's a part of trying to get someone into a subscription. But I think when we think about retention, it's like, what are those core things that are truly driving someone to stick around? And so much of it, it's beyond email and SMS. It's the whole consumer journey from before they even found your product and they were doing research to, you know, after they have churned. Like we invest time and resource into our graduates. Once every single person who buys infant formula will eventually churn. Every subscriber we have churns, and we make that a celebration moment. And so like when you go to cancel your subscription, there's an option that says graduating from formula. And there's like all this confetti that comes out when you hit it. And there's a whole sequence where like you get an email with Tan France, who's a celebrity, is like congratulating you. And it's turned into this like viral referral moment organically. And so I think that's what encompasses true retention. We invest a lot in our brand. We invest a lot in do good and ways for people to continue to engage with the brand beyond purchasing. And I think that really excites customers.
And I love that. Sorry, go for it.
No, I was going to say the other piece is data. Like we try and understand who our customers are. We try and collect data for them that will give them a better personalized experience.
Celebrating kind of like the end of a journey. I think that, I keep saying, I think that, Chewy is one of the brands that I'm inspired by. Like when a pet passes away, they kind of like, that's when they raise the flag and they send flowers. And traditionally you're like, that's the end of the customer journey. Like most people aren't buying another pet or getting another pet or adopting another pet the next day or even the next week or even ever. But it's interesting kind of like celebrating the humanness of it, right? Where it's like, regardless of your journey with this brand, generally somebody that's in the, you know, that's in the category of like having children or raising children knows a lot of other people that are in the same kind of like space of their life. So it's interesting thinking about it as an organic, you know, kind of like referral vessel without being obnoxious about it and saying like, please refer 10 people, but just creating a memorable experience. So I love that. The last thing, we don't have a ton of time, so I want to cover the, well, a little spice wouldn't hurt. So any spicy thoughts you have on the current phase of growth, the current kind of cost cap arguments and chat GPT and all the chaos. But last thing for me on the retention side, I want to hear more about your sloth. For a period of time, you went from a, prior to your VP days, you went from a director of growth to director of sloth and then transitioned back. So I'm curious a little bit about that journey there.
Yeah, we came out of a massive infant formula supply crisis. There's a duopoly in the market, and one of the competitors, 40% of the inventory was wiped off of shelves, essentially shelves overnight. So we quickly realized we had to scale back every marketing lever and stop acquiring customers. And like when I talk about retention and loyalty, we prioritized our existing subscribers and ensured that they did not have interruption in their deliveries throughout the whole infant formula shortage, where people were freaking out, driving to 10 stores, buying formula on Craigslist, like making it at home, which is really dangerous. And our customers were like chilling. And I think I hear stories, people post on LinkedIn, like, you saved us, like, you don't know how much it meant to us. But really, in that moment, we didn't know how long the crisis was going to go on. And it was like, well, why don't we just get all the customers we can today, like money today or money tomorrow. And we were like, no, it's more important that we be the only brand that has an uninterrupted delivery during this period, uninterrupted supply. And that has created like an amazing retention and loyalty flywheel. And those people are like, I will take this brand with me to the grave, like, you know, diehard supporters of the brand. So I think it's really prioritizing your customer experience. And so many people forget that. It's so simple. It's just like, do what your customers want you to do. And now we can talk about cost caps.
If I didn't know you were a growth gal, I would be 100% sure you're on the retention side. Just in the way you're talking about building, you know, customer experiences and retention. I think that there's so much to learn from that story. 9 out of 10 growth marketers would be like, this is our time to just pump. This is our time to kind of run ads like crazy. Nobody has formula. I remember shopping for my son at Target, and there was not a single container of formula. And that's like, this is the time to show that we have the shit and we are the shit. And taking a step back and being like, well, as a human, if a brand took care of me during these times to that degree, I'd be forever indebted and excited about it. And I think that's like this brand building moment that's like, well, how do you measure it? Well, you know how to measure it. It's like the moments and the stories that come from it. Cost caps, yay or nay?
Well, I will say on that note, I've been converted because I was like a very deep performance, like, do everything we can to
performance get maxi.
Yeah. Oh, I was performance maxi.
We got Cody a little softer too. I think it's just like, I think slowly you realize that there's a cognitive dissonance between like how you are in the ad account and how you are in the streets. And you're like, you know, it's just like a different, it's just a different personality. And you start realizing you're like, hey, but as a customer, I fucking hate that. So why am I doing that?
Yeah. And the other thing I've learned is that when you optimize for the customer, your growth is actually bigger than it could be if you like pay for it. Like the growth we've had, we had like our biggest growth months when we were not acquiring customers. And it was,
you
just
know, we're
like,
going to clip this, right? Like we're going to clip it and post it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then the growth guys will be all over it.
They're going to be like,
I can't see this going well.
In all their private DMs.
They'll be like, where's the attribution? Show us the tools. Oh, wait, pro attribution or like, where are you on the attribution?
Oh, gosh, you know what? I think attribution is interesting because none of the tool, I don't mean to like harp on any of the tools or like rag on any of the tools, but like they're only,
it's getting spicy.
It's getting spicy, but they can only measure like a couple of things that are going on. So it's only as good as like looking at, it's like not as, it's not that much different than just like looking at like a platform or looking at a couple of platforms at a time. You're not looking at like the full story of what's going on. The only way you can really understand is if you just stop doing everything and only do one thing at a time. So I think everything is like everyone is trying to like triangulate the answers of what drove this or what drove that. And oftentimes it's like, none of the things that you think are driving are actually what's driving.
Are you actually not using any like tools at Bobby?
So we're not using an attribution platform, but we do have a data scientist who's trying to piece together our own attribution model.
You're running holdouts and all that?
That's the challenging part, is like when you're a fast growing startup, mm-hmm. there's an opportunity cost to holding out to get the answer, right, versus actually growing the business. And it's like, maybe someday we'll be like, let's stop doing everything except for this one thing, yeah, and figure out if it did anything. But I mean, we're doing our best at we're trying to do holdouts. We're trying our best to do holdouts, but you can only hold out a couple of things. I think the biggest lever is your offer. Your offer. Hmm. I mean, it goes back to the four P's. As much time as I've spent marketing, like the four P's are legit, and people are like, oh, you just spend more in ads budget and that's what drives. No, it's like your price, your product, promotion, and place and distribution. Oh, yeah. So like, where are you showing up? Yeah, those things are real.
I love it. Cost caps, yay or nay?
Nay.
Okay.
Cost caps are for the weak.
Well, this has been a pleasure. I know I'm giving you a little bit late, so thank you so much for joining. Maybe we'll do it again when Cody's back. Maybe not, depending on how, you know, if he listens to the end of this episode and he likes it or not. If he doesn't get to the end, he won't see the spicy piece, so yeah. We'll kind of see where it gets to. But thanks, Emil. Love what you are doing and appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Eli. I love what you're doing too. Bye.